Welcome to Phantom Astronaut. I'd like to thank all of the Phantom Astronaut patrons for supporting the show. If you enjoy the podcast and would like to support the show, visit phantomastronaut.com for all the different ways that you can help us continue to create. Today, my guest is Ashley Opon, shamanic practitioner and death doula. Hi, Ashley. Thanks for joining me.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing well. We don't record these episodes live. So for the audience, we're recording this like in the middle of the tail end of the big Los Angeles rain that we were having. So today's kind of like the best day that I've had probably in about a week. Luckily, no flooding, anything like that over here. But, you know, it's been a little bit wild out here on the West Coast. What about you? You're on the East Coast, right?
Yes, I am. So it's mostly just been cold, like just cold every day. Actually, the past day or two were like the first days we had of like sunshine in like 2 weeks. So that was actually fantastic. It was nice to actually see the sun and people not, you know, being so sad.
Well, that kind of bringing happiness to the world in one form or another is a great way to kind of kick off a little bit of our conversation, because in the introduction, I call you a shamanic practitioner and a death doula.
Yeah.
And that's something that I talked about very, very briefly with a previous guest. There was an episode that I did with a mortuary science professor named Ben Schmidt. And we were talking about all of the different sort of changes that have been going on in the end of life, for lack of a better term, industry. I don't really like calling it that, but you know. And one thing that I had brought up was that over the last decade, I've seen an increase in people offering services as death doulas. And I'm kind of familiar with everything that entails, but why don't you tell my audience what that is and how you got involved in doing that?
Sure. So a death doula, so some people call them death midwives. Those are usually the two terms people use the most, are somebody who help someone go through the dying process. So that can start from the beginning and it can start from pre-planning. A lot of people don't always think so much ahead, or they do, and they'll have something like a living will, which is saying, listen, this is what I want. If in the event that I can't speak for myself, I want X, Y, and Z, or I don't want this in the event of X, Y, and Z. So people start there. But then there's also things like belongings. People don't usually assign, unless they have a will, unless they have a lot of maybe material things, expensive things, sometimes they'll do that. But there's other things. People may not have spoken to the people that maybe they wish they always spoke to. Death doulas help with that. Or they have things they want to accomplish, or they want to make memory projects, or they do things where they map out their life or look at their life through pictures, through projects, through writing, all different sorts of things. So people, it can start from that pre-planning phase, or advanced planning, as a lot of people call it. And then it can go all the way to the person actually dying. The process of dying is that something that not everybody knows what it looks like. So also there's a lot of education being done with families, and some death doulas actually sit with a person while they are actively dying. And then it can also go to the post-mortem state of it, which is helping the family after death. One thing I always thought was so interesting that like people don't think a lot about is when families are grieving, the last thing they want to do is like go cancel credit cards, you know, go call the bank, go call this. So death doulas can help with that aspect of things too. And they can also help people do things, especially now with a lot of people being very environmentally conscious or trying to not just give all their money to a funeral home where they feel that they may not be taken care of. And that's not to say that all funeral homes are like that, but some are. they can have home funerals. And a lot of death doulas help people organize those, make sure they're following all the state ordinances and get everything arranged for that. Or if they want to have an alternative type of funeral somewhere else, or even a natural burial, that's something a lot of people have started being really interested in. Death doulas help with arranging all of that, explaining how that's going to work to the family. They just do so many things. That's some of the things that death doulas do. The way that I got into it was from a young age, in my culture, we have very large funerals. Our funerals are like weddings. And I always explain that to people. Like, we have very large funerals. We have 7-day funerals. We have specific traditions that go into the funeral. We have specific things that we wear. It's very ritualistic. And it's something that I was very used to growing up. I'd been to funerals. I'd been to wakes the way that I was used to seeing it. When I got a little bit older, I think I was in high school, one of the choir teachers, who I wasn't in choir, but I was in bands and we all hung out together. So I knew the choir teacher. She passed away. She was a very, very lovely woman. And I remember going to the funeral, and she is an American woman. And so she had a traditional American funeral, which I had never been to. So I went and I was like, this is very interesting. So just also to preface, in my culture, at funerals, like the funeral part when people are being buried, there's a lot of wailing. There's a lot of throwing yourself down. Like, it's very dramatic. Like, other people would be like, this is a lot. Like even for death, this is too much.
Ashley, what culture is that that you're speaking of?
Yeah. So I'm Ashanti. So we're a big tribe in Ghana, but a lot of, at least I can speak for West African people, have kind of similar traditions. So whether it's Liberia, Sierra Leone, Nigeria, a lot of us have kind of similar funerary practices. They're usually very large and very, there's festival parts, there's fun parts, there's sad parts. So yeah, so that's what I'm used to. I'm used to women throwing themselves into the grave. I'm used to women wailing and screaming. When I went to this funeral, everybody was very reserved and very quiet and crying very like silently. And I was like, is everybody okay? Like, are you guys all right? Because you're not emoting the way I expected everyone to emote. And then I realized this was like typical for Western funerals. And I was like, wow, this is really interesting. I feel like everyone is way sadder than they're putting on. And I was like, I feel like everyone isn't emoting and feeling all their feelings. And I was very interested in just how this was very normal. And then I kind of started learning all these different things about how people don't really get that much time to grieve before they have to go back to work. And I'm like, well, you need more time to grieve. You need this and that. And then on the other side of that, I'm also somebody who's always loved mythology and religion. So I love learning about the afterlife and what people believe. So that always really fascinated me. Then later in my life, when I went to college, I became a nurse. So that's what I currently do for my muggle job, as I say. I'm a registered nurse. So I learned even more about the death process that way. And then I became a hospice nurse for a while. And now I work in oncology. So I do see and have to deal with a lot of death and death conversations. And it's when I looked at like, how can I help people through this process? Because especially when I worked in hospice, I saw a lot of holes. Like, there's a lot of education that isn't being done. There's a lot of things. While hospice is an amazing resource, I'm not trying to hear to shit on hospice. Sorry. I don't know if I can say that shit. Okay. I'm not here to like poo-poo hospice at all, because hospice is amazing. But I just saw holes. Like, you know, everybody can't do everything. So I found out about death doulas and I was like, wow, this is really interesting, especially when I left hospice. I was like, well, I would love to continue death work in this way. It seemed a little bit more holistic and I wanted to get a little bit away from the clinical side. I didn't really want to do that as like a side thing, honestly. I wanted to just really dig into the education of it, the helping people through that aspect, because there isn't a lot of education on how death works at all. Like, people know people die. We all know that. But when people are dying, it's such a highly emotional time that there's a lot of things people, when you're dealing, especially when you're dealing with a loved one, a lot of things people don't do because they don't know. So it's just something that I want to help, as well as all the other amazing death workers in the world. I want to help kind of bridge that gap with everybody.
So there's a lot to kind of dig into with everything that you said. So let me share a couple of personal anecdotes that touch on different things. The first of which is that I'm always very interested in kind of what's common or spiritually, culturally accepted around death and things like that, especially in West Africa, because, you know, looking at me, I'm like incredibly bright, glowing like a light bulb white person, but a quarter of my family, my grandfather's side of the family, they actually came from Senegal to the Americas as sugar plantation slaves in the Caribbean. So, you know, I'm always kind of interested in that aspect of my ancestry in terms of kind of like connecting some of those dots. So that's really interesting to know that. And in terms of death over the past 10 years, I mean, I've lost my grandfather. My wife lost her mother, father, and grandmother, lost my grandmother, two grandmothers. So we've had a lot in that span of time of experience with death and the, not just the esoteric aspects of it, but the practical aspects, which you also address very much as a death midwife. So I guess like what we would do in my side of the family, my wife is also multiracial, and she's part, you know, American, white, English, and half Japanese. Her mother was from Tokyo, and my wife lived in Japan for quite some time. So when her mother passed away, there was like a little bit of a rift, because the father's side of the family was, I want to say, Presbyterian. And, you know, of course, you know, she gave a little bit of lip service to that, but her and her family and everything like that, they, you know, are very traditional in terms of like the Japanese traditions with Shinto and all that kind of stuff. And so there was a little bit of a rift of, you know, how do we reconcile this? On our side of things, you know, my grandmother was Catholic, but she wasn't necessarily practicing. Some of these other people that we've lost, we don't know what to do. So I have ancestors. I have like my great grandmother, who's literally just in she's just ashes in a cardboard box, because we don't know what to do with her. We don't have any burial traditions. We just aren't equipped. So from your perspective, what is it like trying to navigate the wishes of family versus the wishes of individual versus cultural norms? Like, how do you balance all three of those things together?
Yeah. So that can be really difficult. And that's one place that I think death doulas, death midwives can all thrive. So because we're like the person's advocate, it comes into play, like, and we hope, and what our best scenarios are, is when the person is still alive to tell us what they want. So of course, you know, always that's the best scenario. But the other thing is always to try to find people who the person trusted, the person was really, really close to. If the person had a particular sibling or particular child that, you know, they were really close to, we try to go to them and say, like, well, what do you think they wanted? And hopefully people also have written it down. That's why I always encourage people, write stuff down if you want something specific. And in terms of culture, these kinds of things happen a lot, and it can be really difficult. But again, you just do your best to kind of think of what this person was. If the person wasn't religious and everybody's like, well, they weren't religious, but we need to have a Catholic funeral, you know, it's kind of, you can't, if the person isn't with us anymore, it's hard to go against family. But you try to say, well, do you know what the person really wanted? Were they more of kind of a spiritual person? Were they more secular? Were they just, you know, religious to show that they were religious? Because some people are, it's not a big deal. And with culture, I always, again, if it's before, which is ideal, try to ask the person, are these cultural things important to you? Some people don't care, and that's fine. And some people really care, and they say, I really want this X, Y, and Z. One way that a lot of these things come up, and I've seen it and I've heard from especially death doulas who work a lot with LGBTQ communities, because there will be a lot of issues sometimes with people, especially trans people, who their family was maybe not accepting them being trans. Then they want to bury this person with their dead name, which is not acceptable. So in those cases, these death doulas who are doing that work, they are usually the biggest advocates for those people, you know, and trying to bring their friends, if they don't have specific biological family, bring their friend family and be like, no, these people knew this person and this is what they wanted. And that's our whole goal, is to just try to know the person beforehand to say, okay, what is it that they wanted? How did they live their life? And sometimes you get clues by just knowing the person and how they live their life. Oh, this person wants to have the family wants to have a big Catholic funeral, but Aunt Mary never went to church. Like, she just wasn't even into that. Like, Aunt Mary didn't own a Bible, which is 100% fine, but like, then why aren't we having a big Catholic funeral if Aunt Mary didn't even really care? Like, so you just try to get to know people and know them through their family and see what they wanted. Or in the case of, like, you were talking about, like, having ashes, sometimes people get like, oh, what do we do? What do we do? And I'm saying, my biggest thing is, if you want to spread them somewhere that you know that person enjoyed. And if you'd rather keep them, that's fine too. But just anywhere, I mean, if you want to, sometimes I've done this with people when they get very upset about, oh, well, I don't know where to do it. First, I say, if you want to keep it, keep it. But if you want to spread them, spread them. And also, if the person is spiritual and I can talk to them on that level, I say, listen, this is just their body material, right? So wherever you scatter it on earth, it doesn't matter, because their soul is no longer here. So they're somewhere much better, much happier, much healthier. Don't worry. I don't think they're going to be angry with you. I don't think they're going to worry about it. Wherever you feel that it's good for you, and whenever it feels it's good for you to spread it, go ahead. And if it never feels good, that's okay. You know?
Yeah. See, I don't know. This is going to be a little bit weird. I haven't talked about this. I haven't talked about this on the show before, but you know, I have a really, really strong connection with the pets that I have over the years. Right. Mm. I think a lot of people do. Like, when you have them, they're, you know, I guess if you don't have a strong connection with animals, you know, you might not be able to recognize the level of communication and emotion and, you know, everything that they share with you, like a human friendship, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love them very, very much. And two of them passed away from old age, and they were brother and sister. They were cats. They were Shadow and Fortuna. And the girl passed away a couple of years after the boy. He had cancer and he passed away early. But what I had done is I had a special urn made from this artist, and both of their sets of ashes are self-contained, but within this urn. And what's nice is on top of it, I have like a little oil lamp. So what I can do is, you know, if I'm ever feeling like, you know, I want to reconnect or meditate on them, or, you know, whatever else you want to call it, I can sort of like light that little lamp, and I can have like a nice quiet space and time, and, you know, gather my thoughts and stuff there. So I mean, that's one thing, and that's, I guess, again, like a personal choice about how you deal with these things. But, you know, it is different for when there's other people that are involved and other powers that are, you know, wanting to have time with something, you know. So right. You know, making sure who gets access to what when is very important.
Like, so just on that note, I like animals, right? I don't have a pet. But I was always like, yeah, animals are fine, blah, blah, blah. There actually is a whole space for pet doulas, like people who literally deal with just pet deaths, because it is so, like, you know, it's a member of your family. And I never really understood that connection, but it's fine. It's not a big deal. So my sister recently got a dog. And I kid you not, I was in bed the other night crying, thinking about how this dog is going to die one day. I am obsessed with my sister's dog. I sometimes am sad and I just go on my phone and I look at pictures of my sister's dog, or I'll text her like, can you text me a picture of her? And then she does. And now I'm like, I get pet people. This isn't even my dog. And I'm upset. I go to the store. I'm like, oh, do I think she would like this? I'm going to get her these different types of treats. I get it now. And I apologize to pet people that I didn't get it before. I feel you on a spiritual level now. And it's, I know. And I told my sister, before she got this dog, I was like, listen, you know, because she had never had a pet. We didn't really have pets growing up or anything like that. So I was like, listen, you know that this dog is going to die before you, right? And she's like, yeah, but I'm ready. I love her. She's the best. I was like, okay, whatever you say. And I thought, okay, cool. She's getting a dog. Obsessed completely. I miss her right now. Honestly, I haven't seen her in 3 days. And I'm like, I got to go see this dog. So cute. So I get it. And now I totally understand that feeling of, because they become they literally are your friends. And they're your family members and you love them and you're with, they live in your house.
Oh no, for real. So when my wife's father passed away, he was outlived by his cat Fiona. And so, you know, we had to kind of figure out, you know, how to deal with Fiona, because she had health issues and everything like that. And this is a bit controversial to say, and I don't want to veer too long into the animal thing, but we haven't ever put animals down, and there's controversy. You know, some people say we'll put them out of, you know, their pain or this or that, but you know, we try to communicate with them and we try to ascertain whether they want to be done, right? And you know, all the animals that we've had, all of our pets, they have always very actively communicated, you know, they want to be on our chest, they want to be around us, they you know, they get a little bit scared, you know, when we're not in the room with them, when they're in the death phase. And I think that let me just show you this. This is going to be kind of funny. And anybody, unfortunately, we're not doing the video, but I can describe this to you. Let me see if I can actually even show it through the camera. Let me see if you can get a good look at this. So what you're seeing here, that's Fiona with the blanket on the far side. That's my wife. And the other animal that's in front, that's my cat Floki. And what you can see is my wife has her hand on Fio's hand, and my other cat Floki has reached out his hand onto my wife's arm, and they're making this sort of triangle together. That was the day that Fiona passed away.
Oh my God.
So that's when I say how emotionally intelligent, you know, these pets that share your space with you are. I mean, that's such an incredible amount of empathy and understanding that's being expressed, you know?
100%. And to be honest, and it even goes back to people, because one thing, like I said, now I work in oncology and it's a different world than hospice, obviously, but we see a lot of the same things. We see people, and because they're not on hospice yet, we have patients who they are done. And it's so hard for family members to accept that. Of course, nobody wants their family member to not be around. We all wish that our family members and our pets could live forever with us healthily and we could be healthy and all that kind of stuff. But that's why, that's another thing that death doulas try to be advocates for. When people say, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore, I'm tired of this, you know, I've come to the end of my life. It's so important, just kind of like what your wife did, because she didn't have to say it to them. But it's almost like a support and an acceptance. It's like, hey, listen, I'm here. Whatever you need, I'm here. And this actually just happened last week. A coworker of mine, who I love and adore, her father, who was elderly, he's in his 90s, was sick for a few weeks. He was not that long, but she came to work. She was very upset. She was telling us how she was, they were putting her father on hospice, and we were all, you know, comforting her. And she decided with her siblings, they were going to go over that evening and just let him know, like, it's okay. He wasn't really eating. He was forcing himself to eat. And she's like, I think he's doing it to make us happy because he knows that, like, we want him to get better. But at this point, he's not going to get better. They went over there in the evening time that same day. They told him, listen, like, it's all right. We just want you to know we all love you. She has a large family. They called everybody. Everybody was in and out of the house, telling him, talking to him. Literally 12 hours later, he died. And this is a trend that happens a lot. I've seen it throughout my whole nursing career, and most medical people will tell you they've probably seen it too. When there is that support and love and acceptance, whether it is an animal, whether it is a person, any living thing, when they feel that, like, okay, it's okay, you know, whatever has to happen now happens, they do tend to let go at that point. I've seen people whose siblings or family members live across the country, and this person was supposed to die today. Like, their vital signs are terrible. Like, everything is, like, medically speaking, this person should probably be dead right now. And they will not die till that person gets there. And that happens all the time. It's like, it's fun. Like, it's just a thing that happens. Like, it's a spiritual love, I think, that people have for each other. And I think they want to wait. They want to know that everyone's going to be fine. Once they realize, okay, everybody's okay, and I'm going to be okay, and I'm surrounded by all this love, then they do tend to go. Like, it's very common.
And you're a very young person, and, you know, I'm obviously, we're not going to talk about it. We're not going to talk about age, but, you know, you're obviously a very mature and well-centered adult, but you're still a very young person in the grand scheme of things. And it makes me wonder a little bit about your personal relationship with death. 'Cause I'm terrified of dying. It's one of those things where I'll start to fall asleep at night, and in the back of my head, I'll hear, like, oh, is this what it's going to feel like when you die? And then I'll suddenly be awake, and I'll be up for, like, 6 more hours.
Oh, no.
It makes me wonder, like, somebody who, you know, is within your age range, who experiences death so frequently and comforts people through the process, both the dying person and the people around them. What is your personal relationship to it at this point?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, because nobody ever asked me that. So thanks. I know it sounds crazy, and I'm like, this is not like a flex or anything, but I've never really been afraid of death. I think growing up, I've always been really, I'm like, love religion and mythology. I didn't grow up super, super religious, but I did go to church. Like, I was raised Catholic to a degree, not super serious, but I went to church with my dad, and I would talk to him about these types of things all the time. My dad and me used to have these conversations, and when I was a kid, I was terrified of death. And maybe I remember being like 4 and talking to my dad about it and be like, I do not want to die. And one day getting so upset and realizing, like, you're going to die. Mom is going to die. I'm going to die. I was like having a 4-year-old having like a spiritual crisis. Like, what am I going to do? And my dad was like, listen, when you die, everything is okay because you're with God and everything is fine. Like, you're literally fine. Nothing hurts. Like, I was a kid, so the way he explained it was, nothing hurts, nothing is bad, everything is good, and that's it. And you have nothing to worry about at that point. And I was like, that's it. And he's like, yeah, and it's okay. And I was like, and it's fine. He's like, of course, it's fine, because you're going to go with God and you'll be fine. So when I was a kid, when I heard that, for some reason, it just put me in a space as like, wow, there's literally nothing, to me at least, I was like, there's nothing to be afraid of, because there's an ultimate peace. Like, when you die, there's nothing to worry about ever. We, every single day of our lives, no matter how rich, how mentally put together you are, you wake up and there's something to do and there's something to worry about. And it's like, when you die, there is not There just isn't. There's just peace. And when I think about those types of things, I realize I was like, I'm not afraid of it because number one, it's going to happen. And to anybody who's listening, it's like, now I have profound anxiety because this woman keeps going on about this. I'm sorry. I'm like,
it's like, going to happen. I don't
know. It's inevitable.
I don't think that's what people are taking away from it.
Okay. Like, was it like Ben Franklin said, like, the only two inevitable things are like death and taxes or whatever. But like, it's like it's just going to happen. And there's nothing is wrong at that point. And even if you don't believe that there's anything after that, that's fine. But then there's just nothing. And it's fine. Like it's not, you know, so I totally understand that fear of death because it's unknown and we like to know what's going to happen. Everybody wants to know. We've all been trying to figure it out for thousands of years, but at the end is the end and there's no pain. And I think also I've seen in my career, I've seen so much suffering sometimes that I'm like, you know, it's not always bad. It can be so freeing for people. Like, they just don't have to deal with pain. They don't have to deal with all this stuff. Now, for the loved ones left behind, it's painful. It's grief. It's difficult and it's awful. But for them, sometimes it frees them from whatever they didn't want to be a part of anymore or whatever their body couldn't take anymore. And the other thing that I learned through so far in my life, especially when I started working hospice, was just like, it made me enjoy my life more because I was like, I see now how short it is. I see like this can happen anytime. And I know people my age who've died, people I went to school with and all these types of things. I'm like, you just don't know. So it's just like every moment of your life, you need to just at least try to make the best of it. Even if, you know, whatever, you have to do your mundane stuff every day, but trying to make the best of every day was kind of what I always try to take away from it.
What kind of advice do you have? I'm going to give you an anecdote about something that happened to me, and maybe you have some wisdom to impart to people. So this is probably about 15 years ago, maybe a little bit more. And I was with two friends, one of them, this woman, we were on the subway and she'd gotten a message that her cousin had passed away. And it wasn't unexpected. He was pretty young. He was about 8 years old, but you know, he had medical complications and he'd, you know, essentially been, you know, in the hospital since almost the time that he was born. So this wasn't something that kind of came out of the clear blue sky, but she was so, you know, distraught about it. And in trying to, I don't know, comfort her, make it better in some way, what I'd said to her was, I said, well, you know, I'm so sorry that this happened. You know, it's terrible that you lost your cousin, you know, but you know, if there's any nice thing to think about is that, you know, he was always surrounded by people that loved him and, you know, he didn't, you know, experience many things in the world, you know, in terms of people being cruel to him and things. So even though it was a short life, he, you know, he had a life where he was well loved and knew almost nothing but, you know, this wonderful unconditional love. So, you know, maybe that's something you can sort of take some solace in. And she got so mad. She started hitting me. She was screaming. She was like, you sound like you're jealous of a kid. You don't like your life and blah, blah, blah. And people, you think people are mean to you. And, blah. And I'm like, okay, you're taking a lot from this that I didn't put into that. I don't know. So yeah. I don't know. Like, what advice do you think you have for people who are trying to say something positive or encouraging to like a coworker or a friend or somebody who's experiencing grief?
Mm-hmm. So it is so, this is one of the most difficult things ever. So another thing that I do in my life is I volunteer for a group where we facilitate groups for different types of loss. It's usually for people who have lost kids in one way or another, whether it's their own children, brothers and sisters. So the group that I facilitate is people who have lost their kids. And we have these conversations constantly. Like, they are the ones telling me like what people say to them that pisses them off. Like, or, like, That's one of our many conversations that we have in the group. There's always a lot of laughter with that, unbelievably. But I think when it comes to death, there's never really a right thing to say. And people get very nervous because they're like, oh, I don't know how to broach this topic with this person. But one thing I always tell people is the first thing you can say is like, hey, how are you? I'm so sorry. And sometimes you just say, I'm sorry, and let people tell you if they want to talk about it, great. If they don't, that's fine. I'm not saying to change the subject and do something else, but let them talk about it. Another thing is, especially I see this a lot in my group, in my child loss group, is people always say like, I want to talk about my kid, but I feel like everyone else is going to be uncomfortable. Like, I feel like everyone's going to freak out that I'm talking about my person who died. Allow people to just do what they want to do. The best thing you can ever do is honestly just say to people, what do you need? Do you need anything? Like, anything you want to say to me? Anything you want to talk about? Because like you said, some people will react like that, you know? And of course, what you were saying, you were trying to help. But then some people don't take that as helpful. Some people be like, well, you're making light of it. When obviously you are 100% not. But like, people will say that. And then people do try to say, a lot of time people hate, people say, well, this so-and-so is in, this is not what you said, but people say, oh, so-and-so is in a better place. People don't want to hear that shit. Like, sorry again. People don't want to hear that. Like, you know, their loved one just died. They don't want them to be in a better place. They want them to be here with them. So it's like, it's so hard because everyone's trying to say the right thing and not mess up. But I think the best thing to do is just say, hey, listen, I'm so sorry. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And you can say, how do you feel? Like, honestly, sometimes just say, how do you feel about that? Like, how do you feel? Is there anything I can do for you? And stop. And you can stop it there. If you don't go on about it, it's okay, you know, because you don't know what to say and you don't know how the person is reacting, especially something like you're literally on a subway and the person gets that news right there. So you're just like, hey, like, what's up? What do you want to do? Are you okay? Is there anything you want to change our plans? You want to do something else, you know? And I think sometimes you can just do that. And then also not, when time goes by, not forgetting that person. Because a lot of people talk about how like, oh, in the beginning, everybody would talk to me. And then people kind of move away from them. They don't want to talk to them because, oh, the person, she gets upset every time we bring it up. No, people don't, they don't want you to move away from them. They don't want you to hover, maybe, but just reach out every now and again. Hey, how you doing? Everything okay? You need anything? And I think people appreciate that more than anything, just to know that you're still there, you still value, you still care about them, you know, after the death. Or so, yeah, I think it's just people just ask people what they need, what they want, and you don't have to say anything specific. Just find out from them what you can help them with, I think is the best answer.
I mean, that's such valuable information, because we, and I understand that the American culture, quote unquote, mm-hmm. is this awesome, intricate patchwork of so many different cultures. Mm-hmm. But there are some things that are kind of broad and prevalent within the society that we live in. And one of those things is that we don't really talk about death. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, people are ill-equipped for the things that we just talked about, partially because of that, because it is so taboo.
Yeah.
Have you thought about, you know, anything related to how that could change for the better in society? Should we be more open about it?
Yeah. So 100%, I think people need to be more open about talking about it. I feel like we also have this thing where everybody's like, oh, I don't want anyone to be sad. Don't be sad. Don't ever be sad. Everyone must be happy. Everyone must be okay. And it's okay to just not be okay sometimes. You're just not. Nobody is going to be all right all the time. And it's okay to broach these subjects with care. And there's also a lot of different communities. Like you said, America is a giant patchwork. There's a lot of communities where people are superstitious and be like, well, if you talk about death, someone's going to die. Well, we're all going to die anyway, so might as well just bring it up now. Like, you know, let's get it over with. So, yeah, I think it's super important to have these conversations, because the more comfortable that we get talking about death, the easier, not, okay, easier is not a good word, the better we can grieve, because grieving is going to happen regardless, and grieving looks different for different people. Grieving can be being sad, and grieving can be angry. Grieving can be confused, can be a bunch of different things. And when we are having the conversation about it, we can at least be prepared for the fact that this is something that is inevitable. And I think, unfortunately, with rates of like opioid abuse, I feel that has also really put that into perspective. It's something that people need to talk about a lot, because people die of opioid abuse a lot. And when we don't talk, and you know, addiction is something, it's a disease that we try to manage for people, but it's not always managed, and it's not always manageable, and it can destroy families and mess people up. But once we're open about it, and we talk about addiction, it makes things easier for everybody. Not that it's okay, but it makes it like, at least we understand it better, right? Now we understand it's a disease. We understand that it's not something that we can always just fix really easily. And it comes with a lot of other mental disorders that go along with it. So I think when we talk about grief, not that it makes it easy, but it does make it something that we can all sit around and have a conversation about. And everyone doesn't have to get angry or upset. We can just say, this is what it is. This is what's going to happen. This is how we want to start dealing with it now. And especially now, going to people like people who are dying, people who are in hospice, things like that, no matter their age, the grief process actually starts before that. And when we start talking about dying, unfortunately, before that, we start getting prepared for our grief going forward. And it makes for a healthier journey dealing with their grief than people just being all of a sudden shocked and not being able to function because they're like, I didn't realize, I didn't understand this was going to happen. So I think, yeah, it's really important for everybody to have these conversations when they can, when it's comfortable for them, because I think it's just going to make everybody, our society, healthier.
It, you know, I was in Japan a couple of years ago for the cousin of my wife's wedding. Her name was Miki. And it was actually kind of funny. This is how intertwined death is in some other cultures. Just to put this into perspective for the audience, I'm a pretty big guy. I've got, you know, broad shoulders, you know, just big like linebacker looking dude. I know it doesn't quite maybe look that way through the camera because of the perspective, but I'm a little bit intimidating in real life, and I'm aware of that. And in Japan, where people are, you know, even broadly smaller than they are, you know, here in the US, I'm even like double as intimidating. What happened was, my wife's uncle, he took me aside, and you know, he says to me, he's like, hey, I need you to stand over here in front of this door, because I just need you to stand over here, just don't let anybody out when I and I'm like, oh, okay. So that he goes and he like closes the door. And then he tells me, he's like, all right, here, stand here. So I'm standing in front of these locked doors, and he goes over and he starts whispering to these old men. And I'm guessing they're like the bride and the groom's like grandparents and you know, uncles and stuff like that, all, you know, elderly people. And as soon as he's like whispering to them, they all freak out and they start running to me, and they're like trying to push their way past me and open the doors and everything. And I'm like, what is going on? Why am I the bouncer? And then later it was explained to me, it was like, oh, we didn't want to tell you, but because Miki is having a Christianized wedding, and she wasn't religiously Christian. In Japan, they have these like Western chapels that are kind of like a novelty thing where they have like a faux Christian ceremony. It's more of like a fashionable thing than a spiritual thing. It's kind of funny. Mm-hmm. And these men were like so freaked out because they thought they thought everyone was going to get ready and then go to the shrine for the wedding. And why they were freaking out was because, like, I guess if you don't have the life milestone events and stuff at the shrine, they're in their spiritual tradition, they think that your soul won't be able to find its way back to the shrine and be with like all the other ancestral ghosts at the shrine.
Oh, wow.
One of these things where you're like, oh, we could have used a death doula at the wedding. That would have been. Yeah.
Everybody, it's going to be okay. Don't.
They were terrified. They were absolutely horrified that that they hadn't considered. They're like, but when you die, you don't under. Where are you going to go? You got to come here.
Just like random fashion chapel. Like
no. I know. But that's how radically different like other cultures approach it. And there was another woman that I used to work with, and she was, I think, half Chinese, half Cambodian, and her father had passed away several years ago. And sometimes she would once a year take off from work so that she could go to the gravesite. And one of the traditions that they have is there are artisans that make paper replicas. Do you know about this?
I think I've heard of something like this.
Yeah, you can like make you can have a paper car made like a Porsche. You can have like a little paper mansion, whatever. And they bring it to the grave and they burn it. And then as it sort of transubstantiates into the astral plane, that is a gift that manifests for them in a tangible way in the afterlife. So every year it's almost like a spiritual birthday present that they're your loved one. I think that was kind of cool too. But we don't have these kinds of things broadly, you know, on that baseline of, you know, whatever that United States sort of mildly Christian underpinnings of everything combined with, you know, incredibly secular kind of mechanisms and not wanting to, you know, step on anybody or offend anybody, you know, who may have a different practice. So we just kind of don't talk about it. And so we end up in a situation where I think we are very much disconnected from death and from our own acceptance of death.
Yeah, 100%. I think ritual is so important. Ritual brings things together. I actually was reading recently about the Puritans and how they had such a lack of ritual that it actually caused problems. And then they ended up doing a bunch of like folk magic because they had no rituals. So it became a problem for everybody but like people love rituals. We love doing things in a certain way, having these practices. Cause like you said, it connects us to who we are. It connects us to our cultural and ancestral heritages in a lot of places. And if you think, which a lot of cultures do, that we are just on a different plane, you know, than the other people who have died, those rituals still connect us and keep us together, you know, even though we can't see them or hear them. It's like these things keep us, that we know they're there and we know they're granting us, you know, our prayers and things like that. So yeah, it's very important. I think a lot of different places people are trying to come up with rituals, whether they're religious, cultural, secular, because they think people are seeing now the value of that, and also seeing what happens when we don't have rituals. We have this like weird disconnection from it.
So if somebody is in a situation where they are anticipating end of life, you know, be that from a long-term disease or whatever have you, just maybe even advanced age, what do you suggest that they look for in a death doula?
Okay. So I think if the person has, first of all, I would always speak to somebody. If they say they called me or asked me, what do you think I should do? Or who do you think I should talk to? I say, what are your goals with this? Is it that you have things that, do you have your plans in place? Do you know where your things are going to go? Do you know who, is there anybody that you want to talk to? You want to make sure that you clear the air with somebody before you feel that you're going to go. Do you have a specific wishes for your funeral? Now there's different people, and different people have different needs. Some people will just say, well, I want someone to help me plan my funeral because I want this very specific type of funeral. I want a natural burial. I want to be buried here. I want to be buried there. I'd say then there's death doulas who literally just do that. There's death doulas who literally just do any specialty. If someone says, I want to make myself project, I want to do a legacy project where I tell my stories and I leave them for my kids so that everybody can know these stories. I want to make a book. I want to do this. Then you can find a death doula who just does legacy projects and does that kind of thing. So it just depends on their goals. But just starting by literally Googling or having someone help you look and Google for a death doula in your state, because they exist on many different websites. It's easy to find them now. And just asking, hey, do you do this? Do you do that? These are my goals. Are these things that you can help me with? Most death doulas, I've never met a death doula who was like money hungry. They don't do that. they're all mostly doing it just because they really love it and they really want to help people. And if they know I know certain people who are really good with home funerals. I know people who are really good with 11th hour meetings, sitting with people while they're dying. And I'll be like, oh yeah, you should call so-and-so. You should do this. So you find one, you find us all. it just depends on your goals. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Ashley. This has been a wonderful conversation. I really appreciate your time. How can people find out more about you and everything that you do? All your socials, everything.
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram. I'm on Instagram and Threads sometimes when I'm in the mood. Sankofa HS. That's spelled Sankofahs. I also have a podcast called Dine with the Divine, where I talk about mythology, religion, and culture. And on Instagram and Threads and YouTube, that's at Dine with the Divine. And you can email me at sankofahealingsanctuary@gmail.com. Anytime, if you have any questions, you can DM me on any of those socials. Yeah, you can get at me in many different ways.
Thanks again, Ashley. This has been wonderful.
Yeah, thank you so much. This has been so fun. Thank you.
Visit phantomastronaut.com for all of the different ways that you can help us to continue to create. And I will see you out there.